MRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. UVA's rector faces questions from lawmakers over the resignation of President Jim Ryan and the quick selection of his replacement. As drought worsens, Woodstock issues water restrictions. And the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank gets 30,000 pounds of frozen meat. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, January 13th. University of Virginia Rector Rachel Sheridan answered a slew of questions from lawmakers Monday, mostly about former UVA President Jim Ryan's resignation and the quick selection of a new president. Megan Pauley with VPM News reports.
When asked whether she disagreed with the contents of Ryan's November letter, Sheridan said she'd only comment on her recollection of events leading up to Ryan's resignation and referred back to a letter she released prior to his. It's still unclear the role, if any, board members and other state officials played in Ryan's ouster. She also defended the board's decision to move forward with the presidential search in the manner and timeline in which they did. New President Scott Beardsley also addressed lawmakers Monday. Senator Cree Deeds told VPM News he still has questions and may want to speak with Sheridan further if she's going to remain on the UVA board.
It's in all of our interests. Our economy depends on a healthy university system. It's too important to be tainted by partisanship. And it never has been so partisan as it is now, and that's just too bad.
Deeds said there's legislation in the works to ensure that after Spanberger, no governor appoints more than half of any public college's board in the Commonwealth.
Megan Pauley reporting. The town of Woodstock has issued a mandatory restriction on all non-essential water usage. According to the latest U.S. Drought Monitor report for Virginia, most of the WMRA region is experiencing severe drought. WHSV reports that a spokesperson for Woodstock said that the new restrictions are based on the seasonal flow rates of the North Fork of the Shenandoah River, which is the town utility's water source. The town is asking residents to make voluntary conservation efforts. That includes taking shorter showers and not running the washing machine or dishwasher until fully loaded. Another Democrat has entered the race to unseat Representative Ben Klein for Virginia's 6th Congressional District. WHSV reports that former delegate Wendy Gooditis announced her campaign on Monday. Gooditis, who lives in Clark County, represented Virginia's 10th House of Delegates district from 2018 until 2024, when the county was redistricted to the 31st district. She says her campaign for the U.S. House of Representatives will focus on restoring Medicaid and health care tax credits. Other Democrats running for the 6th district nomination include Ken Mitchell, who ran against Klein in 2024, former FEMA official Pete Barlow, and author Beth Macy. Governor-elect Abigail Spanberger has tapped Carrie Chenery to be Virginia's next Secretary of Commerce and Trade. The Stanton native previously served as executive director of the Shenandoah Valley Partnership and founded Valley Pike Partners in 2018. She also served on Spanberger's Transition Committee for Economic Development and Small Business as a co-chair. In a statement, Chenery said she looks forward to leading with a, quote, collaborative and business-friendly approach to support the governor-elect, Virginia's partners, and the Commonwealth. The ACLU of Virginia is claiming that the state's corrections department is, quote, over-detaining a significant number of people as a result of earned sentence credits being improperly applied to individual sentences. Virginia Public Radio's Dave Cantor reports.
A letter from the state ACLU to the Corrections Department says that instead of beginning to accrue immediately after conviction, the credits start being counted on an arbitrary date. The civil rights group has sued the department over the issue four times since 2022. In two of those cases, the state Supreme Court ruled that the incarcerated plaintiff should be released early. ACLU attorney Jerry Greenspan maintains that the corrections department has displayed a pattern of starting the clock later than it should.
The sort of bigger issue is that the General Assembly writes the laws and VDOC has to follow them. And where the law is clear, it doesn't matter what VDOC's policy preference is, they have to follow the law.
Kyle Gibson, VDOC's communications lead, didn't respond to a request for comment. The credits were expanded in 2020 through state legislation, though the new regime wasn't implemented until 2024 after being blocked by Governor Glenn Youngkin through a budget amendment. The ACLU's recent letter doesn't mention potential legal action, and Greenspan said she wouldn't comment on whether the organization is planning to file suit. The note did ask for a response from VDOC by January 2nd, which Greenspan said she hasn't received. I'm Dave Cantor.
The Blue Ridge Area Food Bank recently received 30,000 pounds of frozen meat. The Waynesboro Steak of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints donated the pork and beef products to the food bank that serves parts of central and western Virginia. 29 News reports the donation will provide an estimated 90,000 individual servings of meat to community members. Abigail Spanberger is about to be sworn in as Virginia's 75th governor. Fundraising for her inauguration is breaking records. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Here are the big money donors for Abigail Spanberger's inauguration. Altria, the Auto Dealers Association, Amazon, Dominion, the Realtors, Capital One, and Philip Morris. Kyle Kondig at the University of Virginia Center for Politics says that's a who's who list of movers and shakers in Virginia politics who also happen to have a financial stake in who occupies the executive mansion.
You could look at the growth and the amount spent on the inauguration for the last several governors and just see it sort of going up, maybe not exponentially, technically, mathematically speaking, but certainly increasing a lot. That's not unusual when you put it in the context of other kinds of spending in Virginia politics and also in American politics.
Ever since Bob McDonnell was inaugurated back in 2010, the fundraising for inaugurals has increased tenfold. Here's Alex Kena at Virginia Commonwealth University.
The real issue is the appearance of corruption. Even if there is no corruption, even if someone like an elected official like Governor Lex Spanberger isn't influenced by these gifts, it still doesn't look good. And it undermines people's faith in the democratic system.
He says the fix for that would be putting some kind of limits on how much money can be donated. Right now, there are no limits, and so the fundraising totals grow larger every year, with this year setting a new record for inaugural cash. Michael Pope.
After suffering from a stroke in 2011 in Massachusetts, Rachel Bowman has made progress in her recovery with the support of friends, family, and a local nonprofit organization. WMRA's Aisha Pirga reports.
After several weeks in Massachusetts following her stroke, Rachel Bowman was flown to Virginia, where she was rehabilitated at the Winchester Medical Center.
I was told that if I wasn't doing anything, like within 5 years after I had a stroke, that I was not going to make any sort of gains or progress of any sorts. And I've been slowly getting movement back. So it's been a long process because I'm a very impatient person and I want things now.
Diane Fink, Bowen's mother, says Rachel has been in a couple of rehabs and is now receiving treatment at home with occupational therapy or OT.
Her caseworker was here for OT and saw her standing up. And of course, she still has a gait belt and everything. But Rachel, like she says, has come a long, long way from where they said she'd ever be able to do.
A gait belt is a sturdy safety belt worn around a person's waist to help caregivers safely assist with walking and standing. In the first few years after Rachel's stroke, Fink says that somebody would walk behind her with a wheelchair and she had that gait belt around her at all times.
There would be a bar on the side of the wall, and then the therapist would walk beside her because it's her left side that is paralyzed from top to bottom, and her knee could give out very quickly.
Fred Bowman is Rachel's husband. He says he's impressed by her strength and bravery.
They had you walking, balancing. They were just walking behind you. You were terrified and they were walking behind you.
Fink said that after they got Rachel home for in-home rehabilitation, they found out about Brain Injury Connections of the Shenandoah Valley, a nonprofit organization in Harrisonburg. Rachel says she appreciates their approach to care.
The therapists take time to explain why they do certain things and why certain ways that they manipulate my limbs are having a good effect. So I'm a person who likes to know why things are done a certain way. And that's really helpful to me to know which muscle groups they're working on.
Ashley Dunlap is Rachel's case manager and a certified brain injury specialist with the organization. Dunlap says she began working with Rachel in 2018.
This is the farthest I've seen her progressing in therapy since I've been working with her.
Dunlap says as Rachel's symptoms have gotten better and she's been able to access different resources, she has been able to make progress in a way that many medical providers thought was not possible.
Many people told her that she would not be able to regain any of this mobility, and she has just continued to strive towards the mindset that she will accomplish what she wants to accomplish, eating away at this step by step. And this is like the first that I've been able to see her actually stand up and take steps. This is a testament of how strong and determined Rachel is, and also a testament that a brain injury is not like an ending. It's just only the beginning of how far you can go in your recovery.
Dunlap said they've helped Rachel with hurdles such as getting grants and going through fundraising efforts to help her access equipment and services. She said that includes helping Rachel get funds to install a winch into her wheelchair van so that she could safely get into the van. Fink says Rachel's friends and neighbors have been very supportive. Rachel was a reporter for the Daily News Record, and Fink says her readers sent care packages after the stroke. Loved ones also organized fundraisers for her, which paid to get her home on an airplane when she was bedridden. And Fink says Rachel has always been someone who, if you told her she could not do something, she did it.
To be fair, I've always been a little bit of a daredevil.
And she says that no matter what, she will grit her teeth and keep going. For WMIA News, I'm Aisha Pirge.
You can find a longer version of this story and links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. Full disclosure, Brain Injury Connections of the Shenandoah Valley supports programs on WMRA. Finally today, new research from the University of Virginia reveals widespread ghost forests along the East Coast. WHRO's Catherine Hafner reports.
Ghost forests are stands of coastal trees killed by saltwater from flooding and sea level rise. Their pale and leafless remains give them a ghostly appearance. UVA's research details the extent of these phantom forests from Maine to South Carolina. Doctoral student Henry Young says they used artificial intelligence to identify about 10 million dead trees.
We find out the traditional way of detecting ghost forests missed out a lot of them. Basically, we found a lot of undocumented hotspots throughout the coastal plain.
Young says healthy coastal forests capture carbon, support wildlife, and protect the coastline. He hopes researchers can use the new data to learn more about how to save them.
Catherine Hafner reporting. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.